Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 81, recorded Wednesday, December 23rd, 2009. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: up in the air world and security potpourri. So this week, I'm coming to you today from the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois, back in town after a quick trip to a very snowy Philadelphia. My wife was a bit iffy about this trip. It would be very bad if you got trapped in Philadelphia. But while it was a miserable weekend for travelers coming out of the East Coast, watching the stream of Twitter updates from United Airlines on Sunday, I could see them bringing the airports back online on Sunday. And come Monday, I think there was more snow on the sidewalks of Center City, Philadelphia than on the runways at the airport. I tell you, Philly was lousy at snow removal when I lived there during the late 80s, and didn't look like they have improved much since then. Now, this week continues my string of flight weeks. I've been flying to somewhere every week since Labor Day week. That's the first week of September. Since the November episode, I've been bouncing across the country, Phoenix, New York, L.A., and multiple visits to Philadelphia. I haven't looked at my calendar, but I think at 4 months, this is the longest streak of flight weeks that I've had. In past Travel Common episodes at this time of the year, I'd be saying that I was done traveling for the year and looking forward to lying around the house for 2 weeks. But this year is different. I won't get the chance to break the streak, but at least it won't be for work. We're going to burn off some frequent flyer and frequent sleeper points the week after Christmas, heading to Honolulu and then to Kauai. I mean, we really hadn't planned it. And then this fall, United launched some sort of weird little stealth promotion. I got an email saying that they had reserved a number of seats for mileage awards on the morning flight from Chicago to Honolulu on the 26th. Boxing Day for those of you in the Commonwealth, and then a return flight on the afternoon of the 2nd. They were opening a special web portal at 9 a.m. on this one specific day to take seat requests, first come, first serve, and then 2 days later they'd send you an email letting you know how many seats you got, after which then you had 2 days to call a special number and book the seats or lose them. Weird, but getting primetime seats to Hawaii at 40,000 miles a seat, which is sort of the lowest, kind of the super saver level of mileage awards, it seemed like a good deal. And as it so happened, on that appointed day at that appointed hour when the portal opened, I was not traveling, but instead I was sitting in a project room in front of my PC with a pretty good network connection. So I logged in, put my request in for 4 seats, and I got them. So after Christmas, instead of scraping ice, we'll be eating it. Shaved ice, that is. Following up, Sky Ho, a longtime Travel Commons listener, pointed me to a story in The Onion that I think is very apropos for the holiday travel season. In its ongoing effort to cut transportation costs and boost profits, says the article, United Airlines announced Tuesday that it was exploring the feasibility of herding passengers into planes and stacking them like cordwood from floor to ceiling. Research shows that we lose millions of dollars each month by having passengers all sit upright in individual seats for the duration of the flight, said CEO Glenn Tilton, speaking to reporters at United Airlines corporate headquarters in Chicago. However, if we were to remove these seats, we could just sort of stack them all in there one by one as they file in the plane. I'll tell you, my flight home last week from LAX and my flight out to Philadelphia Monday morning felt like pilot tests for this concept. Now, on the website, Ray Medina responded to Arnold Heines' request for help in managing expense receipts. We went through that in the November Travel Commons episode. Well, Ray responded on the website and writes, "My company uses SAP for our expenses. I carry an envelope to every trip with the name of the customer. Throughout the day, I place the receipts in my wallet. Then, every night, I enter the information into SAP and move the receipts from my wallet to the envelope so that the wallet is cleared for the next day. When I return from my trip, I scan the receipts to submit to my company along with the SAP expense summary. After I submit everything, I put the envelope in my filing cabinet. It takes time to get the routine down, but once you have it, you have it." Well, thanks, Ray. That's pretty much my system, except that my company uses Oracle, and I'm lucky enough to have a secretary who makes copies of all the receipts for me. Other than that, my workflow is pretty much the same. Now, since the last episode, when we were going through kind of Arnold's expense hijinks, I've been trying Evernote on my iPhone, you know, sort of taking a picture of the receipt and tagging it with a couple of words. Actually, I think it only lasted about 3 days, you know, getting out of a cab, calculating a tip, getting my bags, checking to make sure I didn't forget anything. You know, remember the thread we had going for the last couple of episodes about forgetting stuff in these moments of transitions? Well, I don't know, taking a picture of the cab receipt was just about the last thing on my mind. I found it easier to just be disciplined about recording receipts every day or so. Now, also then, building on last episode's holiday travel tip segment, a number of listeners posted some good, what we call 201, intermediate level travel tips, sort of the next level up from the travel tips 101 that you see published in every newspaper and magazine this time of year. Well, anyhow, Lori Hum writes, "Don't just pick your seat when you book your ticket. Pay attention to the size of the airplane. Most of the regional jets can't even fit a roller bag briefcase. Every week I watch people shake their heads in disbelief as they board the plane and realize that there really is no room. And no, there's no room under the seat. Carry the laptop separate in a padded sleeve and be willing to surrender the bag to gate check. Full disclosure," says Lori, "I'm the one that got my laptop stolen last year because I didn't grab it out of my bag at gate check." Now, Leo Vigoda suggests this. "If you cannot get a direct flight but have a choice of transit airports, then choose carefully. For instance, while in past years there might not have been much difference between changing at O'Hare or at a New York area airport for a West Coast to East Coast flight, O'Hare is definitely the best choice this year. Fewer flights and a new runway means its on-time rankings have risen quite a bit." And Ian Morgan writes, "I agree wholeheartedly with your point, Mark, about allowing a bit of extra time at this time of year. It still amazes me how many of my colleagues try to do a 40-minute connection in Frankfurt in November." Now, for a suggestion, the simplest thing that I always do is Google the place I'm going to see what's going on. Not only can it be interesting to experience different local festivities if you have a bit of downtime, it can also make the difference between missing a flight or a meeting or making it on time. If there is a large festival on in the city center or a demonstration planned, you are going to need more time to get to and from your meeting, hotel, whatever. Indeed, when in Athens last January, I was aware that there was almost daily clashes with police in the city center. I changed my hotel to a downtown location. At least this way, it means that you aren't sat watching a cab meter clock up whatever local currency is in use, and you don't have to endure the cab driver's personal take on the situation after getting off a long-haul flight. Well, thanks to Lori, Leo, and Ian for those tips. Definitely, you know, 201 level, sort of been there and done that so you don't have to type of advice. Really good stuff. And hey, if you have a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, please send them along. The email address, as always, comments@travelcommons.com, or you can send me a Twitter message @mpeacock, or you can always post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com.
Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree won't be the same.
So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Up in the Air World. You know, in episode number 78, we talked about the upcoming movie Up in the Air, where George Clooney stars as an extreme frequent flyer.
Last year, I spent 322 days on the road. I flew 350,000 miles. The moon is 250. All the things you probably hate about traveling are warm reminders that I am home. You never get behind old people. Their bodies are littered with hidden metal, and they never seem to appreciate how little time they have left. Bingo. Asians. They pack light, travel efficiently, and they got a thing for slip-on shoes. God love them.
That's racist.
I'm like my mother. I stereotype. It's faster.
What kind of relationship do you have?
You know that moment when you look into somebody's eyes and you can feel them staring into your soul and the whole world goes quiet?
Yes.
Right, well, I don't.
Now, ever since the preview trailers hit the web, people have been asking me, is this what your life is like? So a couple of Fridays ago, my wife and I found the one theater in Chicago showing Up in the Air. It's a very limited release until Christmas Day. Watching the opening sequence, a montage of Ryan Bingham, the character played by George Clooney, going through his well-practiced drill of packing, checking in, getting through security, well, it grabbed me immediately. The sort of pack up, zip, 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 walk with purpose through the terminal, hit the premium check-in kiosk, which, now, this was a bit of an off note for me because sort of any self-respecting road warrior prints out their boarding pass at home the night before so they can go directly to the security line. But be that as it may, you know, walking with purpose, hitting the security line, letting the overcoat and blazer drop off your shoulders in one motion, I'll tell you, it was like watching a replay of my Monday mornings, but, you know, with a much more attractive version of me. Now, as the movie continued, I started to pick up some niggling reality problems, the sort of international business class lie-flat seats that were theoretically on an MD-80, an underground tram in O'Hare, the fact that Bingham doesn't forget his hotel room number, but every time we see him going into a hotel room, which is usually in the company of his love interest, Alex, played by Vera Farmiga, we see him juggling a half a dozen room keys from different hotels. You'd think that he'd pitch them during checkout like the rest of us. But, you know, except for the fact that none of Bingham's flights seem to have been delayed, probably because American Airlines was an obvious sponsor of this film, and that probably would not have pleased them. But anyhow, you know, other than the fact that none of his flights were delayed, the film does a good job of capturing sort of the highs and lows of frequent business travel. Now, Bingham's lifestyle, 322 days on the road, leaving him, as he says, 43 miserable days at home in Omaha, you know, that lifestyle's a common one for young road warriors. I mean, Bingham's empty apartment in Omaha looks almost exactly like my first apartment in Dallas, except Bingham's has more stuff. I had a futon and a stereo in the living room and a mattress and a box spring on the floor in the bedroom, and that was about it. Now, most young frequent travelers enjoy this freedom for, 3 to 5 years. I mean, I've had staff flying to, say, Amsterdam for the weekend instead of going back to an empty apartment in Chicago. Or when on a project in Europe, they use their home leave allowance to visit Morocco rather than to see their belongings in Cleveland. But eventually, they settle into relationships and a more settled way of life. I do know a number of guys, though, and they are all guys who never make that transition. They continue to live their lives in the air, using dinners and client meetings as stand-ins for more meaningful relationships. You know, sort of motion, a meeting in Orlando, a dinner in Tampa, another meeting in New York, a dinner in Philadelphia. You know, motion is its own reason for being. It becomes an end rather than a means toward an end. And as Bingham says, we're sharks, not swans. We got to keep moving. you know, their biggest fear, these guys, I mean, really the same as Bingham's, the George Clooney character, that one day the music will stop, the travel will end, and that they'll be stuck in an empty apartment with no way out. In one of Bingham's motivational talks, he says, relationships are the heaviest components of your life. And he counsels his audience to avoid them because they slow you down. You can't live a life in the air when you're weighed down by relationships. So if the front half of the movie snaps sort of with the efficiency of a frequent traveler, the back half shows the dark side. Millions of frequent flyer miles later, Bingham is dragging himself through airports with a little less crispness, weighed down sort of by disappointment and loneliness. The melancholy air that pervades the movie is real. And it is the same sense of melancholy that rules airports late on a Friday night when the real-world Binghams are walking off their planes looking forward to nothing more than their Monday morning flights out.
I've been gone too long to say, but I'm coming anyway. Any way I can to leave this town and get back home today. Let the snow fall through the air. I got 8 long hours to spare. I'll be waiting at the airport bar for 3, but I don't care. 'Cause I would walk 1,000 miles. I would walk 1,000 miles through the snow or rain or bitter cold to be back home for Christmas.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is security potpourri. Okay, so it's the last episode of the year, or maybe I'm getting a bit of an early jump on the sort of hang loose ethos of Hawaii, but you know, I've got some bits and pieces of recent experiences with airport security that I just can't get to grow up into a standalone topic, so instead, here's a bit of a Jeopardy-like potpourri topic. Now, last year, July 2008 to be exact, the Ponemon Institute, I mean, is that any relation to Pokemon? Well, anyhow, they issued a research report that was sponsored by Dell Computers, by the way, that claimed 12,000 laptops are lost every week in U.S. airports. Now, I wrote a post that was a bit skeptical of these numbers. I've never lost a laptop, I wrote, and I don't know anyone who has lost one in an airport. I know people who've had them stolen out of rental cars, who've left them in planes' overhead bins, but no one has lost one in an airport. That's what I said in July 2008. And one of my recent trips out of O'Hare, I finally saw it happen when I watched an older gentleman in front of me in security put on his shoes and walk off to his gate. Repacking my briefcase, I saw his PC sitting there, lost and forlorn, in a gray bin. Now, I know how it happened. He had unpacked everything on the X-ray belt and then headed over to the metal detector, but was sent back because he still had his shoes on. Now, I saw his yellow Lufthansa boarding pass in his hand and guessed that he was European. He's used to taking his belt off, but not his shoes. I had already started feeding my bags into the X-ray, so we just sort of slotted his shoes between my bins. Now, on the other side of security, he must have been sort of distracted trying to find his shoes, you know, through my bags, and just forgot about his laptop. When I saw the laptop, I flagged down a TSA screener. I pointed out the bin, and then pointed to the guy walking down the terminal, said, "Hey, there he goes. There goes the owner." Now, she was very nice, actually. She ran after the man, brought him back. He looked at the PC and then opened his briefcase. He had a very nice PC sleeve, but it was missing its key component. The TSA screener looked at me and just said, "Thank you so much." I sensed that I saved her the hassle of filling out a lot of paperwork. Now, I recently paid $30 to avoid my own TSA hassles. My Illinois driver's license was up for renewal, and because I hadn't run into anything in the past 4 years, all I had to do was send in a form, and they'd mail me back a 4-year renewal sticker to put on the back of my license. Now, that's a very nice, convenient service. except that the last time I did that, I spent the next 4 years telling TSA screeners and rental car booth bodies that, no, my license hasn't expired. Just flip it over and you'll see the renewal. Now, it's not really their fault. I mean, they're just reacting to an expiry date on the face of the license. But avoiding that explanation every week for the next 4 years, it seemed worth it. To make the extra visit to the DMV. I mean, the only downside, other than the $30, is a really bad driver's license picture that will stick with me for the next 4 years. And finally, on one of my recent trips to LAX, I was standing outside of Terminal 7 waiting for the Avis bus, and an airport cop comes up to me to tell me to move on down a bit. There was, I guess, a suspicious package sitting on the bench nearby. I mean, suspicious? I look over, like, okay, well, how far down do I need to move? I mean, the cops didn't look too worried. They were just sort of standing right by it, and their dog didn't look like he was reacting anything, and they were sort of talking casually into the walkie-talkie, getting a couple more of their buddies down there. So I thought to myself, well, okay. I end up sliding down about half the island, position myself behind a big concrete truss, far enough, I figured, to miss the major force of any blast, but not so far that I'd miss my rental bus. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 81. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music, the Christmas music, is from Mevio's Music Alley, I'll Be Home for Christmas by Katie Mack, Walk a Thousand Miles by Matthew Ebel, and Blue Christmas by Tom Kiefer. You can find these and more at music.mevio.com. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, suggestion, moans and groans, the cries of the traveler, send them along. Text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to MPcock on Twitter, or always post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. You make putting these podcasts, putting them together much easier when you help contribute to the content. And I hope this podcast entertains you as you're waiting out snow delays in the Northeast or TSA delays anywhere along the line if you're traveling over the Christmas holidays. And to you and your family, a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Travel safe. Take care. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you'll